WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and our February weekly series on life and politics in the New York area suburbs continues today. Larry Levy, Executive Director of the National Center for Suburban Studies at Hofstra University, is back with us. Today's topic, property and space, the lure of owning property and having space, two things that seem out of reach for most people in the city limits, draw people out to the burbs. So it's maybe no wonder that property taxes and land use are so politically contentious in our suburban areas. Larry Levy, welcome back to WNYC. Thanks for doing this with us.
Oh, thanks for having me back.
And suburban listeners, we want to hear from you again this week. 212-433-WNYC on these questions. Is the lure of owning property and having more open space what drew you to the burbs? Is that why you put up with higher property taxes? You heard Rona, our last caller. Do you want to call and yell at Rona or ally with Rona? If you moved to the suburbs from the city, how did you take those taxes into account before you moved? Did you know that you were going to pay higher property taxes, maybe higher taxes in total when everything is taken into account, but that's just the cost of the lifestyle that you wanted to have? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, on how you navigate the tortured relationship between property and property taxes, 212-433-9692, or post a comment to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. So, Larry, I guess it used to be that if you made money, had kids, wanted to buy a nice house with lots of space, didn't mind paying more property taxes for good schools and some notion of a better quality of life, you move to the suburbs. Is it still that mix of reasons?
Yeah, in fact, it's more that than what it used to be. The scenario you painted was only half the story a generation or so ago. People didn't always just move for these better schools, the open space. They were moving away from cities or, in some cases, rural areas that they just found unlivable. In fact, I remember when my folks moved out here, in the 50s, and where I grew up here, in the 50s and 60s, and they missed the city. I mean, they felt that they were giving up a lot of really good things, but they found city life to be just untenable. They couldn't find an apartment big enough for a growing family. They were unhappy about the schools. Crime was rising. My parents didn't make their decision based on race, but I know a lot of people who moved to the suburbs didn't like the fact that their communities were changing, and they wanted it to look just like it looked in the 40s and 50s in New York. But nowadays, I think that with the cities being, especially New York, being very livable, and especially with a reputation that you can find a really good elementary school in almost any neighborhood for your children, people are moving out for the idea of having, exactly as you described, open space, the kind of amenities like parks that are nearby and spacious, that there's no neighborhood you really have to worry about going to.
But there's the conundrum, because those things cost money, and it's a whole other layer of taxes on whatever you may be paying to the state and the federal government. But people move there voluntarily for those things, but then they spend half their time and all their political energy complaining about property taxes.
Well, I think the last caller, forgive me, I forgot her name.
Rona in Rockville Center.
Is closer to the median in attitude than the loud voices you hear screaming about taxes. I mean, first of all, it's cheaper to find housing out here than it is in New York City, by far. if you, I mean, think about it. If you wanted to buy a single-family house in one of the outer boroughs, in an upscale or upper middle class neighborhood, it's going to cost you more in Brooklyn or Queens.
Yeah, so that's part of the financial equation.
Sure.
Is taxes are more, but the homes themselves are less.
That's right, and also you're not paying a New York City income tax, and I think that the Republicans, national Republicans, made this mistake in 1994 when they took over. They assumed that everybody voting for them, and they did really, really well in the suburbs. The suburbs swung their way, was anti-tax and anti-government. But the reality is that suburbanites aren't anti-tax. I mean, who moves out to the suburbs for low taxes? And they're not anti-government because oftentimes they move to the suburbs for the things that government does well. Schools, parks, keeping the water clean, keeping the crime rate down. So they're more about value.
Let's take a call. Jody in Stamford. You're on WNYC. Hi. Hi, Jody.
How are you?
Good, thank you. How about you?
Okay, thanks. Ironically, our taxes actually were raised the year after we moved to Stamford. Mm-hmm. But the reason we chose Stamford is the access to the city. I mean, it's just I think it's like 45 minutes express on Metro North. And we chose Stamford instead of Westchester because the taxes in Westchester were twice as much for less property and less house. And we couldn't figure out why, and maybe your guest knows why, in Westchester County the taxes are so much higher than they would be in Connecticut.
Do you know comparatively, Larry?
Why that is?
Yes.
State of Connecticut just has a much more anti-tax tradition. They are a place where, I mean, they even eliminated a layer of government some years back.
So
assuming
nothing is free, are people in Stamford not getting amenities that people in Westchester are getting?
No, I think they're just paying less for it. I would take a good guess that we have stronger teacher unions that keep prices higher. We have much more fragmentation in terms of the size of school districts, so that you have many, many more layers in the New York suburbs. That's certainly true for Long Island.
Layers of school governance.
School government, village government, town government, mm-hmm. county government.
Jody, you want to add anything else to that?
Well, I think we have a lot of government. Stamford's a pretty big city, but I mean.
But it's one layer.
To have a half acre of property and a garden and a rock wall and 30 trees, all just on my property, and pay $5,000 a year for that in taxes, and have a pretty good elementary school, I think we're getting a pretty good deal.
All right. An advertisement for moving to Stamford from Be Jody's Neighbor. Jody, thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
And we're going to swing over to Putnam County, where Chris is calling. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
So?
Yeah, I'm in Putnam Valley. I disagree with much of what the gentleman on your show has said, but I wanted to quickly say I moved out of the city about 10 years ago, a little bit more than that. And my taxes were very low when I moved here, and that was partly the attraction, but more to get out of the city and into some more rural area.
Mm-hmm.
But my taxes have doubled since I've been here. And I think something a lot of people don't understand is that it's a direct result of residential development. The school costs in my town are about $20,000 per student per year. Even with the new McMansion subdivisions that get very high taxes, those people are not paying $60,000 a year for their three kids. They're paying maybe 20, which is extremely high. But the other people who have been here are paying the cost.
Now explain that. If your property taxes have doubled in the last 10
mm-hmm.
years, why would that be the result of more development? Wouldn't more development mean more people paying into the pot?
Absolutely not, and that's the part that people don't understand. Yes, it does bring money in, but the costs are much higher than what it brings in, and the example of schools that I just gave
mm-hmm.
shows that. In other words, like I said, somebody might
right.
be paying 20, 25, but the cost to the town and the other residents that pay with property taxes could be as high as 60.
Chris, thank you very much. Larry Levy?
Yeah, Chris is on to something very important, and it's a price that a lot of suburbs, aging suburbs, are beginning to pay. It's not so much the question of how much development. It's the kind of development. And when you build homes on a single acre, and that home is occupied by a family with three children in the school, and that school is spending $20,000 a student, the cost to the district, the cost to the general population is $60,000. But that house is probably going to pay $20,000 in taxes. So there's a net loss of $40,000.
So
if you were to build, to leave the traditional single family on 1 acre or a quarter acre plot and build denser development near train stations, for example, you would have a much more efficient use. You also can need to get a commercial development into the mix, which a lot of communities just don't want. So
the
homeowners pay more and more and more of the tax bill.
Larry Levy from the National Center for Suburban Studies at Hofstra, part of a four-part series on life and politics in suburban New York every Thursday this month at this time. And you brought up density. I actually want to play a clip of the defeated Nassau County executive, Tom Suozzi. He was trying to get on the sustainability bandwagon just as Mayor Bloomberg released his NYC 2030 plan, which called for development around subway stations. So there would be more dense development around subway stations and major bus hubs for, you know, sustainability and general livability. Tom Suozzi advocated the same thing for Nassau County on our show a couple of years ago, density around Long Island Railroad stations, though he admitted he was proposing an inherently unpopular idea for the people he governed. Listen.
We're suburban sprawled. We have the same suburban model from the 1950s when we were the fastest growing county in the country that does not provide for high density or growth around our train stations and the density that we need. And on top of that, while I recognize this problem exists, I don't control the zoning. So I'm trying to push against the tide with local towns and villages to get them to change their zoning to create for more density, more rental housing around our traditional downtowns and around our train station.
And Larry Levy, to me, that was one of the most fascinating moments on our show in the last 5 years, an elected official acknowledging that what he thought was right for his area went against the local politics. And here is a conundrum, because you get, you know, you could argue elites like Tom Suozzi and maybe you saying this is what is needed for sustainable growth, whereas the people are moving there for exactly the opposite reason, so they can stretch out on land.
Yeah, I think that people are moving here for what they can get. But a lot of polling that's been done locally and in other suburban areas shows that the folks living there would be very happy to move into townhouses, apartments in vibrant downtowns where they could walk out and go to a restaurant and have a cup of coffee on the corner. The problem is that, particularly on Long Island, that exists only in few places. But I have to tell you that Tom Suozzi may have been a little bit of a prophet, because since that time, a number of villages have embraced this concept of cool downtowns. Because they realize that if they want to keep their young people who are leaving Long Island and other suburban areas in droves, if they want to retain the elderly folks who don't want to live in a big home but who have plenty of income and plenty of interests and are part of the social fabric, they've got to have housing alternatives. At the same time, you know, dealing with this social issue, there's an economic imperative to revive these downtowns, which are, frankly, to use a common cliche, crumbling. They are in need of facelifts. They are in need of jump starting. And the way to do that on a place where most of the land has been developed is around transportation hubs.
Mark in Princeton. You're on WNYC. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Thank you for bringing this issue to the fore. I just wanted to highlight the situation in New Jersey where we have 566 municipalities and 610 school districts, the largest amount of municipalities per capita in the country. We also have the highest average property taxes in the country, and it's not a coincidence. The legislators who largely control the state house are beholden to the local units of government, and no mayor and none of their staffs want to give up their little fiefdoms and consolidate. And as a result, we pay for every back office function, every ambulance service, every sanitation service, there are very few shared services in New Jersey. And as a result, we pay the highest property taxes in the country. And I'm all for great schools, and I happen to live in a great school district. and I'm a registered Democrat, but I think that it's sort of a nonpartisan issue, even though it's made into a partisan issue in New Jersey. It's a nonpartisan issue that the multiple layers of government are all beholden to one another and all support one another. And the state, as you know, is about to topple under its own weight. And one last point is that there's a misconception that it's the state, as in the state government's, fault. People don't even realize, I think, that the municipalities levy the property taxes. The only lever the state can pull is through state aid, which it does to the tune of $11.4 billion a year in state school aid and pension and benefits help for teachers for local school districts. So the state does what it can through very, frankly, very high sales and income taxes, but municipalities are the ones that are the problem, frankly.
Mark, let me read to you a comment from another New Jersey listener, Edward, posting on our webpage. He doesn't say where in New Jersey he lives, but he says, I would much rather pay a county or local income tax than property taxes because the property tax bears no relation to my liquid assets. If I lose my job, my property taxes don't go down. Also, if we replace property taxes with income taxes, we wouldn't need to have all these stupid rebate tricks to help seniors stay in their homes. How much do you agree with that as a homeowner in Princeton?
I somewhat agree with it. I don't know that I would want to completely do away with property taxes because I don't know that – I mean, I think that the shared benefit and therefore the shared cost of some of the burden of government, such as in particular schools, is necessary and is a good use of funding. And I don't know how that would play out through income tax. But I agree with the writer's progressive right. MO there.
Mark, thank you very much. And Larry Levy, it does bring up the idea of the recession and the cyclical nature of incomes and so forth and property values that's taking place right now. But, of course, property taxes aren't really going down.
Well, in a more perfect world, if we went, you know, said we'll design a suburban community, we wouldn't have it completely reliant on the property tax for partly the reason that the gentleman said it. It does not bear necessarily a relation to what people can afford to pay. By the same token, it's a very stable source of income. So you would eliminate the peaks and valleys and the terror that happens in a recession for people who have to pay for government services. But you know, the suburbs have become a bit obsolete in terms of their governance systems, in terms of their housing. These were created at a time of cheap energy, of small communities that weren't beset by the pressures of having to replace really expensive infrastructure. Everything was new back then. But now this inability of all these little fragmented communities to work collectively will be the death of suburbia. I don't mean to sound overdramatic, but it certainly will turn places like Long Island into a backwater if they can't all find a way to get out of their fiefdoms, as he said, and to work together to reduce school costs without killing quality, to develop around train stations without, as Tom Suozzi used to say, he called it the 90-10 formula. He's going to leave 90% of the neighborhoods exactly alike, exactly the way they are. We're only talking about 10% of the land area.
We have to leave.
That would change.
Larry Levy, Executive Director of the National Center for Suburban Studies at Hofstra, joining us at this time every Thursday this week. Larry, how many inches did you get?
About 15.
In what town?
Huntington.
Thanks for joining us. Talk to you next week.